How are you, Kerry?
Oh, I'm great. I'm looking forward to the French Open, actually. It's going to be wonderful to be there at the start of my second year.
Kerry.
What? It feels like I've earned my place amongst the top echelon.
Listen.
Well, this is my time as a tennis correspondent. I have evolved.
Look, your accreditation didn't come through.
Huh?
You're not going. Sorry.
But you said it would be fine. I trusted you. You said it was a shoe-in.
I know, but sometimes the shoe doesn't fit.
Oh, is that another Dylan quote?
No, it's a Gary original.
Oh, how unique. So what should we do if we're not going to go to the French Open?
Well, that's the thing, right? Because my accreditation has come through, so I'm going to Paris, but you're not.
Et tu, Brute?
No, seriously, don't take it personally, but they do great freebies, like high-quality water bottles, fizzy water. It's all very French.
Yeah, I see what's going on. All for one and one for one.
Oui.
Drop Shot, Chapter 7, The Old Gen.
So, Kerry, here we are on the dawn of the French Open. It's 6 months into the new tennis season, 6 months into 2019, and it's been an eventful year for our next geners, isn't it?
It's been a very interesting year. It's not as though they've fallen by the wayside. What's interesting is the majority of them are evolving as players. I mean, you look at Tsitsipas, he's now up to 7 in the world. He lost in the final to Djokovic at the Madrid Open, but he won Estoril. He lost to Medvedev in Monte Carlo. Semis at the Australian Open, where he lost to Nadal. It's been really interesting to see how these players are taking the game to heart, really.
Well, he's beaten Federer as well, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. There's been so much going on, but it's interesting that Nadal seems to be the problem for a lot of the players. I mean, you look at...
Tsitsipas did beat Nadal as well.
Yes,
so
he did.
So he's got over that hurdle.
He's got over that, but players like Demenau maybe hasn't. He's at 26 in the world. He's just lost recently at the Italian Open to Cecchinato, but he's been injured. He lost in Madrid, lost in Estoril, lost in Indian Wells, and he lost to Nadal in the Australian Open as well as Tsitsipas doing so. But before that, he won the Sydney International. So it's been, I think it's been tough for him because he has had these injuries and he's struggling to get back to peak form.
Obviously, there are darlings, Alex and Stefanos, but how have the others done?
Well, I'm just picking out a couple of the others. You know, Munar is now up to 55 in the world. And he's beaten some interesting players this season. He's beaten Fognini, he's beaten Cecchinato, he's beaten Tiafo in Barcelona. He's even beaten Zverev in Morocco. So that's quite interesting. Hubert Hurkacz, he's now up to 41 in the world. He beat Dominic Thiem in Miami. And he's also beaten Shapovalov in Indian Wells, as well as Kei Nishikori. So there is something happening.
There's also something happening with your notepads, because when we started out, they were on ATP notepads. I'm looking at your notes now and it's on Soho Grand Hotel paper.
Well, that's because I've recently come back from talking in New York. Not about tennis, I have to say.
Such a chancer taking that.
What, they give them free to you in the hotel rooms? That's what happens when you stay in a proper hotel room, Gary. I know you're used to staying in sort of, you know, dormitories.
Did they have a coffee machine in your hotel room?
Yes, they did.
They did. Okay, excellent. So after your own version of the sports report with these young players that are coming through, what we've seen is something that the legends of tennis that we've spoken to wanted to see about these players coming through. They wanted to see him challenge the likes of Federer, Djokovic and Nadal and challenge that established elite, challenge the what we've been terming as the old guard that are on their way out, but they're still fighting at the top of the game. And I think 2019 has been a year where there's still work to do, but you've seen it in terms of the results that these players are beginning to establish themselves.
Yeah, I think this is that transitional year, much in the way that 2018 was the transitional year for a lot of the previous generation of the next geners, in that you have people like Kachanov, Zverev, all these sort of guys from that previous round, Medvedev. They've all consolidated their positions and are now moving forwards. And that's what's happening with this bunch as well.
So in this episode, we're going to be hearing from Mark Philippoussis, Tim Henman, Thomas Enqvist and Tommy Haas about their thoughts on this next generation. And as we just said, the key thing they wanted to see was the players challenging, you know, the established elite. And Tim Henman was certainly an advocate of that.
And it's great that we've got both, and we should really enjoy and take advantage of this golden era with Federer, Nadal and Djokovic, because they won't be around forever. But then it's always important that you do have the new big stars, you know, trying to make their mark in the biggest and best tournaments. So, yeah, it's interesting to see almost the rivalry between the two age groups. We've had the rivalry between the individuals of Federer, Nadal and Djokovic, but now we've got that those younger players coming in trying to challenge the old guard, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
And Mark Philippoussis agreed.
As much as we would love Federer and Rafa to stick around, unfortunately, you know, there's only a few years they got left, and it's time for them to step up. You know, the only one, in my opinion, that has been Alex Zverev. He stepped up in a big way. Tsitsipas, that's it. Stefan Tsitsipas. I mean, he's got a great game. He's got a great all-round game. Very, you know, hits nicely from the back. He's got a decent serve and comes in and good volleys. And this is another guy that I like actually watching, because he's confident. He's not scared to go for it on the big points. And he mixes the ball well, you know. And it's nice to see a nice single-handed backhand out there. And so I think those two, in my opinion, are spearheading in that young group.
And even though we're seeing all these players having remarkable results, they've got to stop being sporadic. But they need to find consistency, because it's going to take a lot to replace those top guys, Nadal, Federer and Djokovic.
And here's Tim Henman again on that very subject.
I think the harsh reality is that Federer, Nadal and Djokovic are better. And, you know, Djokovic is at the top of the tree, and the second half of 2018 was phenomenal how well he played. So I think when you look over the last decade, it's been incredible to see how really those three players have dominated so much, and they've won, I think it's 51 Grand Slams between them. So there's been so few opportunities for other players. Murray's obviously done incredibly well to get three slams. Wawrinka the same. Del Potro and Cilic are the only other ones that have been able to get a slam victory. So for the next group, if you include Zverev and the ones that I mentioned as well, Hashinov, Choric, Edmund, Tsitsipas, Medvedev, they're fantastic players with great futures ahead of them. But the reality is they've just got to keep improving.
When we spoke to Tim, what I found interesting was his thoughts on being that lone ranger, you know, when he had the weight of the country on his shoulders, and then Rzeczki obviously comes in as well. But whenever it came round to Wimbledon, there was always this whip-roaring, you know, support from the press. But from the outside looking in, you're thinking that maybe it was perhaps over the top, because everyone was so hungry to see, you know, a British player win it, you know, win on home soil, because the last player was Fred Perry in the 30s. But seeing that and talking to Henman about it, it was interesting, because Tsitsipas is sort of going through something similar, isn't he? Because when we spoke to Maritza way back in the opening episode of Drop Shot in Chapter 1, and then for the Tsitsipas bounce, she spoke about people not really caring about tennis in Greece, and then suddenly Tsitsipas comes along, he's a hero, and in the coffee shops, tennis is replacing basketball on the TVs.
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain similarity. The one thing I'd say that's different is, because there is no historical figure to compare him to, the pressure may be a little less on Tsitsipas, but he is still carrying the hopes of a nation upon his shoulders.
He is, and what Tim said to us, which we're about to play now, is that he never felt that himself, which is interesting, because you'd think that he's fully aware of, you know, Henman Hill and the furore that was following him around Wimbledon whenever, you know, he would open his doors. He's got paparazzi in front of him and, you know, walking through the grounds at Wimbledon to get onto court. But he just said he never read the papers. He never thought about it. And it was an interesting take. And I guess that it shows the mentality of a sportsman to achieve something at the highest level.
Also, I think there's that whole thing. What we see is not what the person in the centre of the picture sees. And I found talking to Tim was really quite enlightening.
I mean, that's the perception, but I think it's sort of a misperception, because the reality with pressure is that it's all self-inflicted. So if you go on the court and you are thinking about the expectations of a nation, the expectations of the crowd in the stadium, the expectations, you know, playing at Wimbledon, on the hill, wherever it may be, then you're putting an enormous amount of pressure on yourself. But if you go out there with a clear mindset of the way that you want to play, the way that you've been practicing and your game plan and strategy, then you're not thinking about all those other things. So for me, it was never a burden. There was never a weight of expectation. You know, it was a place where I'd always dreamt of playing from when I was a young kid. So when I did get the opportunity of going out there to play, I absolutely loved it. If I could have played my whole career on one court, it would have been centre court at Wimbledon. But you can see the other side of the coin when, you know, French players in Paris or other British players at Wimbledon have not performed to their capabilities, because I think they haven't been able to, you know, have that clear mindset. They've been, you know, distracted and their mentality on the court has not been correct.
So from the perils of having the weight of a nation on your shoulders, obviously for the players in the 21st century, which is something we've spoken about, especially with Tsitsipas, is that they have different things to deal with, you know, especially social media. And we talk about how Tsitsipas has championed that, but at the same time, just the wrong sort of tweet or the wrong sort of Instagram post, as we know across all sports or across all industries, whether you're a movie star or a politician or a sportsman or woman, that the wrong sort of tweet can obviously bring on a lot of pressure.
Well, something that you do that is misunderstood, or if you get something wrong, can immediately change the course of your career. It's a terrifying place to be. And one would think that these people would have enough people around them to say, just think before you tweet or before you message or before you put up a photo. And I guess it's having to wise up. This is the modern age. This is a digital age. This is an age of technology, the like we've never seen before. And everything happens immediately. But that immediacy can also cause a long-standing problem.
And Mark Philippoussis, for one, said that he's glad that social media didn't exist when he was a player. However, he does see some benefits to it.
Well, now it's tougher, to be quite honest with you, because now you have social media and technology. You know, thank goodness I didn't have that, you know, when I was younger, because I couldn't imagine, you know, having that in social media, you know, at the same time. It'd be very difficult, because I'm not big on that, on social media, to be honest with you. I like looking, the only thing I have is Instagram. I don't have Facebook or Twitter, but I like Instagram because it's a way I could stay in touch with friends of mine that are in another place in the world to see what they're doing and their families are doing. So I love that. I love pictures. Pictures worth a thousand words. So I just love doing that stuff. So, but to have that where someone can get a hold of you, or you can be, you know, just take a picture of you whenever they feel like it, that wouldn't be easy. So, you know, that's got to be very difficult. The plus side in that, the great thing about it is now the beautiful thing is athletes or celebrities or whatever have a voice. For instance, if you wanted to get your word across, if you spoke to a journalist, that could also get mixed. You know, your true words wouldn't be getting across. But now, because of Twitter, you can bring out a comment or paragraph of your feelings and not even have a press conference and let everyone in the world know within a second, you know what I mean, how you really feel or what you really want to say. So that's for me the most positive thing about it, but it would be incredibly difficult, and I'm very happy that wasn't around when I played.
That was interesting from Philippoussis there, of his take on social media. And what I find is an interesting dynamic now when we talk about next gen and old gen is that it has become, you know, it has done a 180, where when Federer was coming through, obviously any player is going to be the next gen, as it were, even though it wasn't branded then. And if you go back to 2001, so 18 years ago, when Federer was the next gen, he played Tim Henman. And it's funny because Federer's probably looking at getting the likes of Tsitsipas and others now, thinking this is a good tie for me because I can use my experience. And it was that year at Wimbledon when it felt like the stars were aligning for Henman, because it was Federer who beat Sampras to set up a tie with Henman, when normally it was Sampras knocking Henman out of Wimbledon. And as we know, Henman beat Federer that year, but then it became the year of Goran Ivanišević where they had their semi-final over a period of days. But it's just interesting seeing it now, how Federer has been there for so long that he's in the shoes of Henman now.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. That's the cycle of tennis. That's the cycle of life, is that the big dog, the old lion, whatever, there's always eventually someone who will rise from the ranks to take over that role. And it just so happens, that's a very interesting point. There's always a next gen. Well, hopefully there's always a next gen.
But it was funny speaking to Henman, because when you hear someone say that, yeah, I'd much rather face Federer in the next round, that I don't think anyone after 2001 has ever said that.
It was a great opportunity. You know, for me, I'd lost to Sampras in two semifinals. So given the choice of who I'd rather play, Sampras or Federer in 2001, I'd much rather play Federer. So when I got the opportunity, again, I respected his level of play because I knew he was good. But again, I wanted to concentrate on the way that I was playing and the way that I wanted to play, because I knew I was playing well. And so, yeah, it was obviously a close match, but one that I was able to win, and, you know, look back now with fond memories on that.
For all the challenges that the modern world throws at today's players, there is one recurring problem that every sportsman and every sportswoman fears the most, and that's injuries, as Thomas Enqvist told us.
I think so, in a way. I think it's even tougher now because the game is more physical, you know? So I think it also depends a little bit how physically strong you are. You know, it takes some time for the body to also get the maturity of that and the physical strength that you need to play today's game, that's for sure.
And Tim Henman agrees with Enqvist's sentiments.
When you talk about the physical training and injury prevention, that's something they've got to take good care of, because there's no doubt the physicalities involved in the game have changed. I think the matches are longer. I think the players hit the ball harder, and therefore the opportunity to get injured is probably greater. So it's an area that they'll all be very aware of, and they're, you know, very professional, got good teams around them. So that is always a challenge for any professional sports man or woman to avoid injury.
We're nearing the end now, Kerry, but before we get there, I just want to go back over what we've discussed in this series, because you and I have obviously picked our favourites from the next gen event, but then obviously we've spoken about the other players that are probably ahead of them in age and, you know, ability at the moment. For me, it was Stefanos Tsitsipas, and for you, it was Alex de Minaur. But whenever we spoke to, you know, the former players that are, you know, watching a lot of tennis themselves, whether they're coaches or whether they're on the media circuit, it's always Zverev that they come back to. Now, that's sort of stating the obvious, but then it's the way they speak about him, the eloquence. And because, like you made the point before, that, you know, in an earlier episode, is that he should have been in Milan, but he's that good that he was actually in London at the O2 for the ATP Masters.
Well, that's right. He is one of those players who seems to have it all. He still looks like he's piecing certain things together, but on his day, he'll beat absolutely everybody. And I really mean everybody. He's got that whole all-round game.
So let's hear from the players on what they think of Zverev.
Even if he's been around now for a while, he's still, you know, still very young, still developing, still has a lot of room for progress, even if that he's playing very well and, you know, already has beaten the best players in the world. So he's definitely maybe the one that you can see that after Djokovic and Federer, when they start to step down, Nadal, maybe that Zverev is going to be the next number one. I think I would not be surprised.
Tommy Haas.
winning a few Master Series in the last year and a half, 2 years. He's already made a statement that he's the real deal. Discipline, you know, he's got an amazing team around him. Some you know, with his parents all being around tennis all their lives, his older brother. So I think the whole surrounding with him is, you know, is teed up to become the best player he possibly can. And also with his mentality and work ethic, it's right up there to maybe have the chance for him to be one of the guys to win a slam rather sooner than later. You know, the crazy thing is, I think he still has some room for improvement, but now getting also Ivan Lendl on board is obviously a great move, and you could already see some signs that, you know, when he's moving well and he's serving well, you know, with his first serve percentage up high, you know, with that powerful first serve, and that backhand to me is just one of the best two-handed backhands out there right now. It's flat, it's heavy, it's good. He's got good reach. You know, if that forehand becomes more and more of a weapon, you know, I don't care what kind of game you have, it's going to be very tough to play your game against him. And if he continues to play that way and just rise even higher with confidence, watch out. You know, his ranking is already up really, really high, and he's achieved a lot already for his young age. But you know, if he continues that way, I think it's just a matter of time before he's going to lift up one of those big trophies that he wants.
Federer, Nadal and Djokovic are not going to be around forever. So there is inevitably going to be a period of time when that next group get the opportunity. There will be new winners of Grand Slams. Who is that likely to be? I think Zverev is the standout player. But we have to see how he continues to improve and, you know, whether the other ones can catch him up or even overtake him.
From those words of praise for Zverev, I'm just going to play you a clip from what Mark Philippoussis said about your boy, your hero, your protege, Alex de Minaur.
You got Dimi Noor as well, who he's got a great game. I love his mentality, his physical and mental strength, incredibly fast around the court. He's a very solid player. But one thing that I'd love to see him that's going to hold him back by really pushing the top, like the top five, and that is weapons. And I think that's the difference with Zverev, for instance, and Tsitsipas. They have, you know, they have these weapons where they can shorten up the points when they need to or if they want to. Whereas Dimino right now, his strength is his movement and his defense. So if he can add some offense onto that and with his work, you know, he's got great backhand and a good forehand. I mean, he tries to go for it. But I think, you know, maybe in the next couple of years as he physically gets stronger and fills out, and that could help him too.
So what I find interesting from Philippoussis there is that he says Demonauer's strength is his defense and movement, and he doesn't have weapons. Now, when the players are talking about Zverev or they're talking about Tsitsipas, they say he has weapons and they talk about what's in the armory, what's in the locker. So how do you feel about that criticism of Alex? Do you think that's a valid criticism? Do you think that's because Philippoussis does say, even though he's talking about a fellow Australian, that he thinks that will keep him out of the top five?
I think it's interesting, and you have to listen to a player of such stature. I think Alex is developing all the time. And I've noticed this year, I've watched a few games this year of his, and he seems to have developed this running forehand. When it's pushed out wide, he's able to whip that ball back at speed on the move. And I'd say that's one of his greatest weapons. I don't think a great defence will ever win you titles, but it does look as though his game is evolving. And I think we can't really judge him until another year or two's gone by, because I think he's finding new bits of armour for his clothes, really.
For his clothes. Well,
that's where you put armour, isn't it?
Maybe, I don't know. But
where would you put armour then?
I don't know. Let me think.
Probably get a nice big cod piece, wouldn't you?
Yeah, probably. A big one as well. You said it.
But I never said big one.
Well, you said a big cod piece.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we'll have Freudian to scrub
slip
all of
right
this.
There. No, we're not scrubbing any of this. So as we gather our composure for a second, what I wanted to talk about as well before we sign off is that we've been caught up, obviously, with these next-geners, and we've been speaking about, you know, Munar and others as well, and Rublev. But you know, we in episode six, chapter six, we spoke about some of the other players that are coming through that are obviously outside of the under 21s, so they don't count as the official next gen under the ATP's branding. But there's one player that seems to have slipped under the radar, which is Nick Kyrgios. And Thomas Enqvist was telling us that he sees him as being the most talented of any of the players that are coming through right now.
And you have Nick Kyrgios, you know, who we will talk about a lot. He's got probably the most talent out of anyone. Maybe just not the discipline yet or the right attitude towards achieving his goals. But if he finds sort of that next motivation, that gear, maybe the right team around him to keep him motivated and to maybe get a little bit of that taste of what it's like to get to a semis final, so maybe win a slam, maybe that's what he needs to sort of maybe wake up. But you can never count him out. I think he's, you know, when he's on and when he wants to play, he's as good as anybody out there as well. So, you know, it's exciting times, you know, just talking about the next generation, but also exciting times, you know, still with the big guys.
So, Gary, that's it. The series is done.
No. You're being premature. Again, we have the bonus episodes to come. So we've got the first seven chapters, and now we have three bonus episodes to come. So in the coming weeks, we're going to have, well, I'll say we'll call them chapter 8, chapter 9, chapter 10, but we've got the bonus episodes coming, which are just more insight from an agent, a journalist, and...
A coach.
There you go. So, but still as well, on this episode, we're not quite done there because I can't let you leave and get out of it after the interview of Henman, where we were expecting the interview to happen. And where did you go?
Oh, well, we were waiting around for hours being told, Tim will be here in a minute. And I said, have I got a minute to go to the toilet? And everyone went, yeah, I reckon. And of course, I went to the toilet and suddenly the phone goes off in my pocket and it's you going, he's here.
So to cut you off right there, this is the audio of me having to start the interview, very unprofessional, and then Kerry walking in on us.
There's a good bunch of healthy competition of those of that next generation pushing on.
I'm just going to introduce to my colleague Kerry, who decided to join
us. Nice to see you.
Finally, I go to the loo.
Yeah,
no. It's the wrong time, but sorry about that.
No problem.
Which is hilarious what happened there. And I think Henman, all credit to him, he sort of understood what was going on and he was quite happy to let you fill in. But then what we did do after that is we recorded a little bit of audio of us talking about it in the moment and you talking about doing your lucky wee. So rather than us doing our normal sign-off or anything like that, we're going to play that audio now and that's going to see out this first series of Drop Shot.
No, I'm speechless. Thanks very much.
Go on then. Speak.
Okay. So that was great. We just spoke to Tim Henman. What a charming chap he was. But we have been waiting all day, haven't we, Gary, to speak to him. And it's one of the most painful things in the world, waiting around for interviews. And I think you once asked me about superstition, didn't you? And if I had any at football and things. And I told you, well, yeah, there's a few superstitions. We have somebody who gives us a wine gum to try and get us to score a goal. And also the other one is to go for a lucky wee when things are really not going right and you want something to happen.
And there we were, sat here for 2 days at the Albert Hall waiting for Tim. And what did you do?
I went for a lucky wee.
And what happened?
My phone rang as soon as I got up to the toilet and it was you. And I knew exactly what that meant, that Tim Henman had arrived. And he did, didn't he? And you had to start the interview without me.
Well, perfectly capable, of course. But yeah, so I started it and then you came along and jumped in.
I wasn't suggesting that you weren't
capable.
I'll
go back to doing the sound.
I wasn't suggesting you weren't capable. It was ironic, though, wasn't it? Because we had sat here, we were glazing over. You know, you were growing older by the minute. Your beard was going greyer. And suddenly...
it put a whole new meaning to, come on, Tim.
Because he did, and he was jolly good fun. I like talking to him, a good bloke. Until next time, this is Drop Shot. Drop Shot is written and produced by Gary Hayes and me, Kerry Levy. Audio editing and sound mixing by Sounds Like These. Special thanks go to Ollie Slack and Taylor Hayes. Music for this episode was composed by Jimmy Goodwin. Our thanks go out to Mark Epps and Edward LaCava from the ATP. We would also like to thank Tim Henman, Mark Philippoussis, Thomas Enquist and Tommy Haas. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at This Is Dropshot. This has been a PML Studio production.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Dropshot, leave a review, tell a friend, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.